From Iowa Public Radio News, this is The Exchange. I'm Katherine Perkins with John Pemble. Today we're going to the Iowa State Fair, where every year the governor hands out life-saving awards. We'll hear the stories of Iowa heroes and the gratitude of those who owe their lives.
Then we will find one of the most intense competitions on the fairgrounds because it's one of the fastest. The grocery bagging competition is all about balancing speed with even weight distribution of groceries in the bags.
We'll drop in on the Iowa State Fair sew-in, where veterans are working alongside novices to make quilts for children in need.
And we'll hear Iowa's Midwest diva, Leslie Hall, giving her first music performance at the Iowa State Fair, rapping about do-it-yourself crafts in her tight gold spandex suit.
We're taking you to the Iowa State Fair today on The Exchange. First, this news. This is The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Katherine Perkins, and we're at the Iowa State Fair, where every year the Governor's Life-Saving Awards ceremony recognizes courage, selflessness, and quick thinking.
Thank you very much, and welcome to the Governor's Life-Saving Awards ceremony. Thank you so much for joining us this morning to honor the efforts of those Iowans who went above and beyond, who put their lives on the line to save the life of one of their fellow citizens.
The stories told at the ceremony are dramatic, better than any reality TV show. But these heroes are Iowans, humble by nature. So when you ask whether they think they're heroes, they tell you they were just in the right place at the right time. When you ask those whose lives were saved, it's another story. Bob Schossau was in his craft shop, a converted garage, on March 9th of this year. It was cold, so Schossau decided to light a heater. By the time he smelled the gas, it was too late.
And just then, kaboom! And it blew that steel garage door out about 20 feet away from the place, blew the door and window out of the other end, ruptured the walls, and the loft inside fell down, almost getting me. And John come in from the end where the garage was, and he saw the fire was all around me. My hands were burnt real bad, and skin was split open. I was bleeding. Craft items were burnt into my forehead and cheek, and I had big blisters on the inside of my hands, so I couldn't crawl. So John just said, well, then put your hands above your head. And he turned me sideways, and he grabbed my belt, and he rolled me out the door and rolled me over to a carport.
Schossau's neighbor, John Hudgens, leapt the fence in his flip-flops. He suffered carbon monoxide poisoning and frostbite as a result of the rescue. But Hudgens says he never considered waiting for rescue crews to arrive.
I don't know how anybody could do that. You would think that everybody would do what we did that day.
Hudgens received a Life Saving with Valor award for putting his own life at risk to save another. And Schossau's entire family was on hand at the ceremony, all wearing shirts and visors, conveying their gratitude.
I think it says it right across the front of my shirt. It says, thanks, John.
Brian Schwenker of Newton was on his way to work on March 30th when he came around a corner on Interstate 80 near Des Moines.
The car had just stopped rolling. I didn't see the actual contact with the semi. But when it stopped, it was upside down and on fire. And I got pulled over into the grass and got out and ran over there. And got the door open, crawled inside of the car, found the seatbelt. She was upside down, hanging from the seatbelt, and got her unhooked. She kind of fell to the roof, and she hollered at me to be careful. I was like, well, I can't really be careful. Your car's on fire. And I was able to get her drug out, and at that time, another passerby had stopped to help me get her away from the car before it got too bad.
And if pulling someone from a burning car isn't enough, this is the second time Schwenker has saved someone's life. He came upon another traffic accident a few years ago and pulled a man out of a freezing river. When I tell him he should wear a cape, he just laughs and says he wishes more people would do what he did. Schwenker will admit these were some of the scariest moments of his life.
Yeah. Not at the time, but afterwards, driving away both times, I kind of got shaky and realized what I had done. So, yeah.
Schwenker received a life-saving award for his most recent rescue. Kurt Kruger has no hesitation in calling Steve Schultz of Marengo a hero. Kruger got an invitation to go duck hunting with a few friends in November. He says he doesn't get the chance to hunt off a boat very often, so the four headed out to the Coralville Reservoir, where they had mallards in their faces all day. It was sundown, and they hadn't gotten all the decoys back in the boat before the wind came up.
Big wave came over the front, and before we knew it, somebody screamed, "We're sinking," and the nose was starting to go down before you could even think. It just flipped right over, and, you know, I was thrown into the water, and we all tried to grab onto the boat again, but only two of us could stay on there without it still capsizing or going down further into the water. So two of us stayed there, and the guy that called me, Eric Oddy, him and I swam into a row of willow trees that were submerged because the area was flooded. And then we slowly made our way back to where we could touch, and then I thought I saw a light out in the distance, so I started yelling, and Eric said that I was hallucinating. You know, we were both hypothermic, and we were losing energy to just keep going. And before you know, we could just keep going, there was another beam of light that just came right across us, and it was just like a sign from God. And Mr. Schultz here came and picked us out of the water, and we directed him back to the boat where the other two were stationed, and thank God.
Schultz says he had no intention of hunting that day. He was just out on the water with his dog. But the change in the weather turned a 20-minute trip out into an hour back. On his way to the car, he missed the boat ramp and heard the boys yelling as he was getting ready to turn around. Schultz says he wonders if he was supposed to miss that ramp.
The family members of the young men, they say God pushed me beyond that ramp, and I kind of believe him.
Kruger says he feels like he's been given a second chance, and he wants to share it with Schultz.
Oh, well, for starters, I'm taking Mr. Schultz out goose hunting on season opener here in September, so looking to have a good time then.
Steve Schultz was one of 17 recognized at the Governor's Life-Saving Awards ceremony at the Iowa State Fair.
That concludes this year's ceremony. I want to thank all of you for joining us. I want to particularly thank those people that were recognized by the governor today for their outstanding heroic actions. And what we know about Iowans, and the governor alluded to this in his opening remarks, as we're here in this tent this morning, there are Iowans all over this state reaching out to their neighbors, to people they don't even know, to lend a helping hand.
Every year, Iowa harvests 500 million bushels of soybeans. This versatile crop can be used to make diesel fuel. It can also be used to make high-protein food. Most of the food entered for state fair judging at the Elwill Family Food Center is not made from soy products. But in recent years, judging panels of food made with soy are increasing, like the Soy Amazing Panel. While soy is often used in vegetarian dishes, Executive Director of the Soy Foods Council, Linda Funk, tells me that soy food is not just for vegetarians.
You know, the health halo that goes with soy is the fact that it's a complete protein. So it has all the essential amino acids. So it functions like a meat product. And that's really why the vegetarians knew about soy long ago, is because it filled out that amino acid profile for them. And then in 1999, the FDA gave us a health claim that stated if you consume 25 grams of soy protein per day in the context of a healthy diet, it may reduce the risk of coronary heart disease.
One of my friends who went the vegan route says he did it because of how he felt about what he wanted to consume in terms of animal products,
yeah,
but that he didn't care how it was made in terms of health value. And that this was vegan cuisine, but it didn't have really the health benefits of that. You see that? Do people actually eat this for a taste?
Mean, some people do, but, you know, how many people eat food that doesn't taste good? Not many. And especially mainstream consumers. It has to taste good the first time, otherwise they'll never come back to it. So the manufacturers of soy have worked very hard on that, making sure that that food is very acceptable to all types of people.
As we get the judges going, then I'll say a few.
Not all the foods for the Soy Amazing panel need to be vegetarian or vegan. In fact, some dishes have meat or dairy in them, but not for Nicole Woodruff. She's entered previous state fair food competitions with vegan entries like a tofu chocolate pie, but this year, Woodruff has two different entries for this panel.
This year I have a soy pumpkin cheesecake with maple pecan sauce in the dessert class, and I have a broccoli salad with edamame in the side dish class.
Is it a vegan-friendly dish?
It is. I'm vegan. I've been a vegan for about 14 years. I've been working with soy when it first came out in the stores. And soy products have really come a long way in the last just 10 years. It's very much available in almost all the major grocery stores right now, whereas 10 years ago in Iowa, it was really pretty hard to find. You could find tofu, but that was about it. Now you can find anything. You can find cream cheese, soy cheese, soy sour cream, just about anything that would otherwise be made out of milk can now be made out of soy.
We did an excellent job of getting this texture just right. It's soft, it's great on the palate, and yet it holds.
Four judges sample entries in three categories: entrees, sides, and desserts. Woodruff's soy pumpkin cheesecake is eliminated in the desserts class, but her broccoli salad is awarded second place in the sides.
So you came in second, but it sounds like the first place was quite significant.
Yeah, it sounds like he used a lot of different soy products. I had the soy mayonnaise, soy sour cream, and edamame in mine. So I just had three. He had eight, so that counted for a lot. And I know that this gentleman is apparently a very good cook. He's won several other categories as well, or placed in several other categories throughout the fair as well. So
you don't mind coming in second to him?
I don't know if I mind or not, but I'll accept it.
Vegan cook Nicole Woodruff from Des Moines at the Iowa State Fair's Soy Amazing Food Panel. This is The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm John Pemble with Catherine Perkins, and we're at the Iowa State Fair. Coming up, the Department of Natural Resources will tell us why Iowans should not be concerned about mountain lions visiting their backyard, probably ever. And Leslie Hall, she's a musician from Ames, Iowa, and she makes hip-hop songs about do-it-yourself crafts while dressed in a tight gold spandex outfit. Her first Iowa State Fair music performance takes place this year at the Iowa State Fair, and she's very excited. You'll hear why. That's coming up next on The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio.
This is The Exchange. I'm Catherine Perkins with John Pemble at the Iowa State Fair, where Project Aware has turned on the furnace at the DNR building. And is equipping fairgoers with denim jackets, welding hats, and gloves to help recycle aluminum pulled out of the Nishnabotna River. Project Aware organizes volunteers to canoe a specific stretch of an Iowa river each summer, cleaning up along the way. Brian Soonan is Project Aware coordinator for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. He says the program's name is no accident. Awareness is what he's building.
There's a lot of different famous quotes that, you know, all come back to getting people outdoors, reconnecting people with nature, reconnecting people with rivers. And we could get out textbooks and we could have some PowerPoints and we could have some classroom discussions on hydrology and geology and see what people retain and see what people really enjoy. Or we could get people from the seat of a canoe, we could send them down a river, let them spend a week. They're going to learn about weather, they're going to learn about geology, they're going to learn about hydrology, they're going to learn about recycling, they're going to learn about all of these things and how they're not all separate things, but how they all work together.
So far, 1,700 volunteers have logged more than 600 river miles. Those statistics got the attention of the Department of the Interior, which named Project Aware the best statewide stewardship program in the country. Sunan says he knew hardworking Iowans and waterways were a winning combination.
I knew we had 72,000 miles of great rivers and streams in the state. And I knew, you know, the people that we have in Iowa are some of the most hardworking people in the nation. Put them together with the rivers, throw in a couple canoes, and we can pull a lot of garbage out of the rivers. So it's just it's just been a great program as it's developed over the years, and a great group of people that have been involved.
So the month ago, this is in the river, and this is what it's getting ready for. You guys want to feel this?
Volunteer Greg Wedebaugh explains how the aluminum being melted at the fair today will be made into ingots that will be remelted, poured into castings, and formed into security gates at the DNR's building on the fairgrounds.
But this is once river trash, now it's been recycled here at the fair. Cool, huh? Yeah. Sweet.
8-year-old Delaney from Des Moines gets the idea.
Pretty cool, pretty fun. Probably going to help the earth out a lot.
David Williamson is the collaborating artist with Project Aware. He says it doesn't matter how hot the weather is at the fair. The moment people see 3-foot flames, they want to get involved.
People come right up, and we've got 7 kids waiting in line. I mean, last summer, for example, here at the fair, on a really hot day, we had a mother come up and said the girls, 2 fifth grade girls, want to recycle metal. And they got busy with their denim jackets and their welding hats and their face masks and their gloves, melting an aluminum window. And when they got done melting the window, they had sweated right through their jackets, and the mother said as they were taking off their safety gear, "You look a little warm." Was that warm? And they pointed to the furnace, and the fifth grade daughter said, "That is hotter than the Jonas Brothers."
Williamson says the finished gates give viewers the feeling of being in an Iowa river. The design includes canoe paddles, which symbolize that the people who paddle Iowa's waterways are the gatekeepers of water health in the state.
Under the shade of trees near the Department of Natural Resources State Fair building, Ron Andrews is giving a lecture about sightings in Iowa of mountain lions, or as they're also called, cougars.
Well, in the case of cougars, we've done an awful lot of investigations to try to determine if, in fact, the many, many, many reports we get out there have some validity. And I'll be the first to say...
Since 2001, interest in mountain lions in Iowa has been on the rise after one was shot that year in Harlan. Ron Andrews says that interest is based mostly on fear, although he has had numerous sightings of mountain lions in his 4 decades with the DNR.
I myself have had over 1,000 sightings. I am kind of the mountain lion clearinghouse. Other guys have got them and not report them to me, too, other DNR guys. The 5 that we had 4 dead animals, and only one that we can legitimately say was taken by a motion sensing camera out there in the landscape.
So you really have to work to find a mountain lion sighting in this state?
It's really almost impossible. At any one time since this new phenomenon took place in 2001, I would be very surprised if there were more than 3 at any one time.
So why is there such a great deal of interest in the mountain lion? Just because of fear, is that it?
I think fear is a big factor. I call it mountain lion mania or puma paranoia. As you know, they're puma and mountain lion panther, painter catamount. They're all the same animal. And it's something new that's been gone for over a century. They stereotype this animal as some large African animal or whatever that's going to take out anything in its path. That's not the case with mountain lion. They prefer to stay away from people.
When you said you had many, near 1,000 experiences with mountain lion, where are yours at?
Mine have occurred in every county of the state. I work statewide, so I'm in the mountain lion clearinghouse. I don't get them all. The mountain lion clearinghouse where those reports, people call me and send photos of tracks, that sort of thing. We've had reported in every county of the state, but you take the population of people out there, all the roadways, all the other aspects of human activity, someone would have had to come up with a legitimate photo, a roadkill, or maybe even shot at a cougar, you know, if there were any out there, quite frankly.
It sounds like the sightings of a mountain lion are almost as likely as maybe a UFO.
Well, UFO is a good way to express it. I use a Sasquatch, a Bigfoot. In the case of cougars or mountain lions, it's not a hoax because we have those animals that have turned up dead in one good photo. But it's just about like looking for Sasquatch or Bigfoot out there.
Ron Andrews. He recently retired from the Department of Natural Resources, but still represents the DNR in places like the State Fair. According to the DNR, there have been less than 24 human fatalities in the United States from mountain lion attacks over the past 150 years, and none of them have occurred in Iowa.
Hi, everybody!
Leslie Hall is a musician who performs a style of music that sounds like hip-hop with lyrics about do-it-yourself crafting. She stands out in any crowd with her tight gold spandex outfit, oversized wig, big glasses, and lots of blue eyeshadow. Hall has released dozens of videos on the internet, most of which have been viewed by over 100,000 people, including one that has hit the 2 million mark this summer. She lives in Ames, and it's been her dream to do a full-out Leslie Hall concert at the Iowa State Fair, and this year, she gets her wish. Leslie performs for an hour in the rain on the large outdoor nap stage. After the show, many of her fans line up to meet her, including Omaha, Nebraska's Colby Adams, who made a road trip to the Iowa State Fair just to see Leslie Hall.
We drove two and a half hours or so, woke up at like 5:15 in the morning, so this is definitely something different, you know? Like, once I found out that she was performing here, I was like, we're going to the fair. Man, I'm just so excited. I need her autograph somehow.
Colby didn't bring anything for Leslie to sign, so I give him my notepad and a pen.
Here you go. Thank you so much. You rock.
Yeah, dude.
Now it's Colby's turn in line to meet Leslie Hall. His face is beaming with excitement as they embrace.
Leslie, you are amazing. Oh my gosh.
And we have watched like all your videos, and like I have shared you with all my friends, and like
Thank you.
Yeah, so can we get a picture of like
your camera? Let's do this.
Okay.
You want me to hold it for you?
Yes, please.
You betcha.
I take a picture of Colby and his friend as they put on an exaggerated, wide-open mouth face stretched pose with Leslie. This is a trademark facial expression on many of Leslie Hall's photos.
Oh, I love Skip.
Thank you so much, Leslie Hall.
Colby, you got her autograph and pictures. How do you feel, buddy?
I feel ecstatic.
This is how I've seen Leslie interact with her fans since I met her earlier this year. After she meets all of her fans, we need to go somewhere out of the rain. So we move to the quilting room in the Varied Industries building.
Does that feeling ever get old, seeing a fan that meets you for the first time and just wants that hug?
No, it doesn't actually. Maybe it will in 10 years, or maybe 20, when I'm continuing to do this. It's a really good feeling. It's positive, no negatives.
This is probably the biggest single stage you've ever played on, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, I mean, that, whether you're talking about celebrity status or resume, as the French would say, either way, you're looking at a career-building event that just happened.
The goal of being at the State Fair, off the list. Adventureland, it's...
Don't say that.
Come on.
It's true. I'm achieving life goals. So it's what do you do after that? So, or do I make up new goals?
As you come to these goals and achieve them, can I hang out and talk to you about them when it
happens?
Okay,
I'll say, remember the radio interview that we did that one time where our lips got really close because mine were so moist with a honeydew-ripened scent?
Oh, I remember.
Yes.
Okay.
Leslie Hall at the Iowa State Fair. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm John Pemble with Catherine Perkins. Coming up, the very competitive grocery bagging contest, and Iowa country artist Jason Brown. We're taking you to the Iowa State Fair today on Iowa Public Radio. From Iowa Public Radio News, this is The Exchange. I'm John Pemble with Catherine Perkins, and we're at the Iowa State Fair.
So now, it's time to get the show rolling. Here are your 2010 Iowa Best Bagger contestants.
You know, I never thought the bagging of groceries could be an intense competition, but baggers from Hy-Vee, Dahl's, New Pioneer Food Co-op, and Fairway are showing me otherwise. For 23 years, the Iowa Grocery Industry Association organizes the Best Bagger Contest at the fair, with the winner advancing to the National Grocery Association's Best Bagger Competition.
On your mark, get set.
The heat of each bagging contest features six contestants at a time. Each have their own table with the same two dozen items laid out in the same order. After a contestant finishes bagging groceries like bread, peanut butter, magazine, and eggs, the bags are taken to a weigh station and the results are recorded by judges.
When the bags break, does that count against them, or is that just part of the bag? Or?
If it falls out on the floor, it counts against them.
Yeah, but not in the weighing process?
Right. It was in there. That's not a real good spot to be. They're not the easiest things to weigh. Got stuff flopping around there like a fish.
While speed counts, so does the weight of each bag. The idea is to get every bag to weigh almost the same. Judges look at the weight results of each bag and subtract the difference between the highest and the lowest weighing bag.
And if the difference is 2.5 or more, they get minus 5 points plus
music,
five is zero.
Music.
See?
So
the best they really can do is 4 points. And nobody ever gets that. That's a real close gap. There's a big gap between the bags. That's just the way it goes. So really what it comes down to is speed. Speed is what usually wins it, and not dropping stuff, and then weight, number of bags. Three is where you want to be.
After a few rounds of elimination, it's down to the finalists. Each bagger evaluates the size and weight of the items on the table, and they bag everything as fast and as efficiently as they can. In less than 45 seconds, the first bagger is finished. The rest catch up and are done within seconds.
Wow, they're done already. How about a big hand for these finalists? They were smoking. Great job. Great job.
The judges convene and tally the score. Tim Hannon from the Des Moines Fairway store places second. It's Hannon's third year in a row where he came in second or third place. For this year's grocery bagger contest, Hannon missed first place by 1 point.
For me personally, I take a lot of pride in what I do, and I actually feel like I'm competing against myself. I'm not taking away from anybody else, but like in sacking, no matter what I do, it's not going to affect what he does. So I just focus on what I'm going to do and try and do the best I can. And we come here to win. So you're going to be disappointed if you don't win at all. I mean, somebody's got to go home disappointed. So,
the first place is awarded to Jerry Mesher. He works at Spirit Lakes Fairway Store. Mesher will advance to the National Grocery Baggers Contest to be held in Las Vegas next year.
Now, you're going to Vegas, and this is something new for you. You've not gone on to that level before.
I have not gone to the Nationals.
You've been hearing about it from other people who've done it. What do you expect?
I would imagine it'll be really intense, but in the end, it's more of a lucky break is what you'd get.
I saw in the top three that it was all fairway guys. Does that say something about fairway as bagging, or
we bag every order that comes through the register, so we get a lot of practice.
Does fairway still take it out to the car?
Yes, it does. That's been a mainstay since we opened.
So that might have something to do with it.
Yep.
The National Baggers Contest has been going on since 1987, and in that time, Iowa contestants have won it 4 times, and each time, it was a bagger from the fairway stores.
Sewing machines are humming away at the Iowa State Fair sew-in. This is not a competition, it's a mission. The goal is to make 200 quilts during the run of the fair. Those quilts will be given to patients in the Iowa Lutheran Adolescent Psych Unit, Angel Tree Camps for children whose parents are in prison, and kids who come into an Iowa Lutheran children's home. Kathy Safras of Des Moines is one of the organizers of the sew-in.
And a lot of times they arrive at Brimwood, for example, with nothing but the clothes on their back, and so then they get to select a quilt. And that's theirs to keep. So that makes it special because they've gotten to pick out the one they like, and then it's theirs. So it gives them something to hang on to. And it's pretty frightening for a child to arrive at an institution and things are pretty scary in their heads. So this gives them something concrete to hang on to that's cuddly.
Safras and fellow organizer Sharon Meisenheimer of Johnston were looking for a way to get people involved in quilting at the Iowa State Fair, so they tried the sew-in for the first time last year. Volunteers from 66 Iowa counties and 15 states made more than 170 quilts in 2009. Meisenheimer says it's a good project for beginners.
You don't have to have any sewing experience. We start you from scratch. We've got a lady over here right now that has never used a sewing machine before, and she's doing this. We had children yesterday. They have to be 10 to do this, but we teach children's classes in the summer, but this is a very simple project, and anybody can do it if they are willing to listen to our instructions.
But more experienced quilters are also lending a hand. Vera Vandermotten is from Sioux County, but is camping at the fair and volunteering at the sew-in nearly every day.
I just enjoy just being able to sit and do something useful, and it's been fun, and I don't have anything that's blue ribbon upstairs, so this has been fun for me, and I feel like I'm doing something for someone else, so that's fun.
Safra says some stay for hours, others just for a few minutes.
Both ways. We've had some that come and they want to start a quilt. They want to pick out the pieces. They want to sew the whole thing, press it, trim it, layer it so that it's pin basted. And then they quilt it, put the binding on, and they do not want to leave until the whole thing is done, right down to sewing the label on. Other people come in for 10 or 15 minutes and they'll sew a couple of seams, and that's great too, because every little bit counts toward meeting our goal.
And all ages are represented. Jennifer Lane of Williamsburg came to the sew-in with her 10-year-old daughter, Annalisa. Lane says it sounded like fun and an opportunity to pass something on to the next generation.
Her great-grandmother makes many beautiful quilts, so she's getting older and not able to show us what she can do anymore, so it's definitely important to pass that on.
In the first 2 days, 96 volunteers participated in the sew-in, completing 21 quilts. As of this morning, Meisenheimer says they have 145 completed, 55 to go.
The weekends I might throw down a few, Sunday morning warm a few. I've been known to fight for red, white, and blue. How about you? Can I get an amen? Let me hear you scream.
Iowa native Jason Brown released his first country music CD, Dream, in 2007, and it established him as a professional musician. He released a follow-up recording in 2008, but the rights to that record were mismanaged, making it difficult to publish it online in stores like iTunes. He's playing 4 shows at the State Fair this year, and we're behind the outdoor nap stage, laying in the grass, talking about the new direction Jason Brown wants to take his music career and classic country music of the 1980s, where I think I hear a lot of influences in his sound.
You have a sound that reminds me of a lot of the 80s traditional country. It's not too modern. It's very traditional, but it's very forward-looking. Is that an accurate assessment of your sound?
I don't know. I just, I guess I'm just who I am. In fact, when I sing cover songs, it's hard for me not to try to imitate the original artist. So to find my own voice, I guess I just let go of what I've learned when I listen to the cover songs and just let it flow. And that's why the original songs, I think maybe it really does show my originality. And I don't know, I've heard before that it's a cross between, you know, Waylon Jennings and with some Merle Haggard with a little bit of George Strait. So
it was very George Strait with a more aggressive Randy Travis and kind of a Foster and Lloyd rock and roll sound.
That's awesome, man. That is so cool. I like that. I never thought about that. But wow, that's cool. Thanks.
I was a country DJ in the 80s and
would
listened
really?
To a lot of it. Oh, yeah.
You don't even look like you're old enough to be a DJ in the 90s.
what I learned when I was listening to all of those records back in the 80s is that seemed to be a time where country was peaking. And in the 90s, it took some other directions, I guess, crossover areas. But as this decade has set in, some more of the traditional, not as sophisticated produced pieces are coming back, real basic songs. And your album, Dream, particularly from 2007, has a real basic country sense about it. There's some lap steel guitar in it. There's not an overly aggressive bass line or crazy drums, no amazingly far-out solos, just real modest but tight.
Well, it tells the story. The Dream album, I'm really proud of that one because I actually had time to pick the songs on that one. Jason Aldean, there's some songs that he wrote on there, Craig Morgan. There's some real good songwriters on it, and I actually got to take my time and say, this is who I am. You know, it's my first album, this is what I want to say. And that's what I wanted to say. I mean, we're from the Midwest. We're not as modern, but we're not as redneck as everyone, or, you know, backwoods as everyone thinks we are, you know. Being from Iowa and representing Iowa, I think that's my main job when I leave and go sing other places, is to represent Iowa and sing the songs about where I came from and my upbringing, so that when people, without talking to me, they can listen to my songs and really get what Jason Brown is all about and what it was like for him you know, growing up and what it's like for him now living in the Midwest.
You grew up in Iowa, and you decided that you needed to leave the state to take it up a notch. Why?
Well, I don't think I needed to leave the state. It's just you had to go to Nashville. That's where everybody is recording. That's where all the songwriters are at. You know, and in the meantime, since then, there's so many writers in Iowa, and there's so many musicians in Des Moines alone, in Iowa City. It's not, I mean, it's just crazy. But Nashville, you got to go so that when you're recording, I think it's one of those things that when you go in and you're good, I think they can pick up the phone and they can go, hey, come over to the house tonight, listen to this kid. And from there, I think they follow you and watch you. And, you know, so I don't know if it was stepping up a notch. It's just what I had to do in order for radio to play it. They always say, well, where'd you record it? If you say Iowa, it just seems like they don't take it as serious. And I don't know why that is. But you know what? Maybe it's because you just got to, you know, keep the cash flow going in the proper circles, I guess. Whatever it is, it's just where I had to go. And I did. And so I don't know. We'll see where we record the next one.
So most of the songs on your first record were written by other people, kind of like how Don Schlitz wrote all the hits for everybody.
Yeah. I just as of last October, I really didn't know I could write. I woke up one day on the bus and had a bad morning and started bawling my eyes out, just, you know, just thinking about some stuff, and just started writing a song. And I had some people in Nashville read it, and now they want to write with me and everything. And but, man, there's people in Nashville that just, I mean, they go to the restroom, and on the way to the bathroom, they can think of six songs and have the song done by the time they're done, if you know what I'm saying. And so why not let them, why not listen to their music? That's what they do, you know. I don't like to paint my house because there's people out there that can do it better and faster. Same thing. Why not find a songwriter that's a great songwriter like Greg Hannon and Kim Tribble and Will Rambo? I mean, a lot of great writers down there that I don't have to worry about trying to write a hit song. But I've done some writing. Living Off the Land, I wrote that song with Joel Brentlinger and Darren Terrio, the producers of the album. And it's weird when you sing a song that you wrote and see the reaction of people. Because if it's good, you're like, yeah, I wrote that. But when you sing someone else's song and someone doesn't like it, you can say, you know, well, I didn't write it. But, you know, I think, but every single song I sing, it's like I did write it. I've lived every single song that I have recorded. And the weird part is, if I haven't, I already have. It's just weird how you end up living the songs you sing and you sing the songs you live. It's just, it's a wonderful, beautiful circle.
What if 2010 is as good as it ever gets?
Well, I hope not, because this has probably been the roughest year. The second CD we put out, the people I had working for me didn't get any of the mechanical license for it, so that's why it's not on iTunes. I think 2009 was probably the best year, but, you know, I think it's just I've got to have my eyes open and look at all the opportunities instead of just trying to be a country singer. So, you know what? It isn't as good as it's going to get, because it's going to get better. I mean, it's always move forward, and, you know, you got hurdles, well, deal with them, and if you can't jump over them, just work your way through it and then get ready for the next one.
Country music singer, guitarist, and writer Jason Brown at the Iowa State Fair. When I meet people at the Iowa State Fair and they see my Iowa Public Radio t-shirt and microphone, it's not uncommon for them to say to me, "We love what your television channel does." Of course, they think Iowa Public Radio and Iowa Public Television are the same company, which we are not, but we do know we share the same audience, and it's always flattering to be compared to them. Paul Yeager hosts Iowa Journal on Iowa Public Television, and like Catherine Perkins and me, he's looking for stories this week about the state fair for his station. Paul Yeager and I are standing on the porch of the administration building right by the Grand Avenue Concourse.
What are the things that get your attention beyond the obvious staples of the fair, beyond the butter cow?
I did do the butter cow story this year
for the first time.
Yes.
but beyond
that,
you know?
I'm always amazed at people who can come to the fair every single day and find something new to do or something that they do only once a year, whether it's sitting in with the monster arm wrestling people. And you find out there are so many small circles that float on this fair, and they're all just held together in one big fairgrounds. But there's a story. You stop anybody down in the concourse, ask them what they're doing, you're going to get 50 different answers from 50 different people.
What did you find here that was new that you didn't see before?
There's a lot of the fairgrounds. I try to find every single corner to find out if they're there. Case in point, today I was with my mom and dad, and my dad said, oh, saltwater taffy. Well, I knew right where it was, outside of Varied Industries. It's always there. But I didn't know the new tent that was behind it.
So when you find those people that are new to you, are you able to convey it as a new story even to somebody who knows that that person is a regular at the state fair?
Yes. I think anybody who comes to the fair, maybe just once, they don't fully grasp everything that happens. And you talk to people who are like, oh, I'm not going to go to the fair. Why? Well, there's nothing to do. Are you kidding me? There's stuff everywhere. There's, you know, you could get lost for a day in certain events. And I think that's what is so fun, is to always take that new perspective. Somebody who's watched our fair coverage every single year for 40 years, we'd like to give them something new. And chances are the audience did miss something, or something has changed, or it's now the grandson or granddaughter of the person who first started running it. So to me, there's, even though something might be the same, it always is a new and different chapter every single year. Even something as simple as I go to the grandstand show. Well, you know, there's something new there every year.
Paul Yeager, host of Iowa Public Television's Iowa Journal. Like Iowa Public Radio, he's been at the fair for a few days looking for stories to put together. So is the Des Moines Register columnist Kyle Munson. It seems like I'm running into Kyle at a number of events throughout the year, so it's common for us to collaborate on some stories when possible. Iowa Public Radio has been showing up to the fair this year since opening day, but Kyle Munson sets up 3 days before the fair even starts.
What do you do? I mean, there's nobody here except for, like, setup crew, right?
Yeah, but you say that, but the day before the fair, instead of people shuffling down the Grand Concourse, you have vehicles everywhere. You walk around, and instead of just golf carts, there's, like, you know, trucks, semis, things being loaded, unloaded. So the Wednesday before it, that's the day to be here.
As you saw the first day roll around, it was hot, but it wasn't a record-breaking attendance day by any means.
No. And, you know, I was wondering about that, and I haven't really spent time to ask the fair officials about that, because they've really made a big point in some recent years to say, hey, let's shove everybody in the grandstand, give them free corn dogs, and do something like some big promotion that first day. And they had, like, half-price admission, but there was no big razzle-dazzle show.
What is the big deal about the fair? Why do we come to it from 99 counties? And this isn't a new question, by the way, but it's one that I think about when I come here to look around for stories and really ask that base question, why are we here?
Iowa is this really evenly populated, in a lot of ways, state, and we still are centralized by the state fair. You know what? People still look to the fair as our big, the one big annual event where everybody comes together and surprising, silly things happen.
What else is going on for you as you close your time here? You know, you're almost done.
I'm trying to, like, to find the completely new twist on the fair. I mean, let alone just, like, some new feature they install, but what is a truly groundbreaking, if not quite groundbreaking, at least a fun news story that we can tell about the fair? And I'm looking for that fresh twist. I don't know. What story you've done so far do you think is, like, completely as much out of the box as possible? That's what I'm looking for.
This was the year that I saw some other younger musicians and friends and artists around the fair. Leslie Hall from Ames did her first show today in the rain. And it was great. It was fun. And she did a nice interview with us up in the quilting room afterwards. It was inside. And I'll remember that for a long time. Of course, every experience with Leslie Hall is special.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm sure the rain didn't bother her at all. Just knowing her, she just rolled with it. Yeah. Something about the fair is always surprising. You know, it's a little bit silly, whatever, but that's what the fair does. It kind of throws us all together, and then we go, really? You know, it's just continually surprising in little absurd and big ways.
Columnist Kyle Munson of the Des Moines Register. He's been at the Iowa State Fair this year 3 days longer than Iowa Public Radio. And while today is our last day here, Munson will put in another 3 days gathering stories for the Des Moines Register. I'm John Pemble with Catherine Perkins, and this is The Exchange from the Iowa State Fair. This is The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm John Pemble with Catherine Perkins, and we produced today's episode of The Exchange. We started recording segments at the Iowa State Fair 7 days ago. We also produced another hour-long talk show of our segments 2 days ago on Talk of Iowa. You can hear a podcast download of Talk of Iowa or The Exchange by going to iowapublicradio.org. You can find our Iowa State Fair shows and many other great talk shows that we've produced in recent days. Our talk shows are produced by Catherine Perkins, Jeff Schmidt, Alex Hoyer, and Dennis Reese. We get a lot of production assistance from Lindsay Moon. We're hearing a piece by Iowa country musician Jason Brown from his 2007 album Dream. This is titled Dream, Another Dream. We are so glad that we have a chance to visit with you and other Iowans at the Iowa State Fair for Iowa Public Radio, and we look forward to doing it again in 2011. I'm John Pemble. Thanks so much for joining us. This is Iowa Public Radio.